budget cuts are taking a bite out of the funding for the Evansville-based Tri-State Food Bank. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, we find out if the cuts threaten any of the programs to feed the hungry in 33 counties. There's new leadership at the food bank to face these new challenges, and we'll learn about new initiatives to tackle the causes of food insecurity. So how many families need help? How dire is the need? Also, how you can volunteer and help fill the shelves at the giant warehouse off Lynch Road. 2 Main Street is next, presented by Jeffrey Berger, Kim Wren, and the Berger Wealth Team at Bayard Private Wealth Management. From the WNIN Public Media Center in downtown Evansville, I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. Hunger affects one in every seven Americans. That's millions of people, about 14% of all households. Many of these families are our neighbors, right here in the tri-state. We use the term food insecurity, but for the hungry, it's a missed meal, a lack of nutritious food, and a pathway to social problems, health issues, poor performance at work or school, and feelings of despair and hopelessness. Churches and nonprofit agencies help out, but the demand keeps growing. According to Feeding America, 47 million Americans face food insecurity. That's one in five children, especially in single-parent households. And it's estimated more than 50 million Americans turn to food banks and pantries for help. Tri-State Food Bank, based in Evansville, is on the front line in the war of hunger. But like many community-based organizations, including WNIN, budgets have been slashed. So how is the Tri-State Food Bank, which serves 33 counties, handling this challenge to feed the hungry among us? My guest is Joe Klimczewski, Resource Development Officer at the Tri-State Food Bank. Joe is one of several new faces at the food bank coming on board to try and keep the food train on track. So, Joe, welcome to 2 Main Street. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much, David. I have been a WNIN fan for so long. I'm just such an NPR junkie. But
nerd, we call it.
Yes, that too. I remember in March reading in the Courier Press that the food bank had incurred this loss of their biggest grant, a federal grant. And I even made a post about it in my own company, the Diet Doc. And it just shook me, you know, how, when we're dealing with such significant numbers already, how are we going to handle this? And at the time, I was looking around at some possible transitions for my career, and there was a job listing for the food bank. And I just thought, this is one of those moments. You have to do something. You have to be the change. So I contacted them, and here I am now as the resource development officer. And I have since learned that that federal grant cut was literally gutting. I mean, it was about half of our operating budget. And the sad thing to me is those are families, those are kids, those are people who are just not going to get the resources that they relied on us for previously.
So have you had to cut any services or programs?
Right now, we have tried to increase our fundraising, of course, to bridge that gap. And we are looking at the budget moving forward. Our fiscal year just ended, so we're looking at the grants that we have also, and our corporate sponsors, our individual donors. And we are making those decisions as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Now, the impact on Medicaid and SNAP, tell me about that.
So as part of the budget cuts and the federal gutting, as I said, includes 2.4 million people losing SNAP benefits just this week. So those are people who would rely again on the government for supplemental nutrition assistance. And 11 million people are projected to lose Medicaid benefits, which means now that's going to put pressure on their budget for food. Going to the doctor, trips to take your child in to see the pediatrician are just not going to be covered any longer for those people. So we're being pressured on every end.
Now, there is new leadership at the Tri-State Food Bank. Zach Hieronymus, the new executive director, just came on board, didn't he?
Yes. He was in my position 6 or 7 years ago, then moved over to Aurora as the executive director. So he has always had a heart for public service, especially in the nonprofit sector. And so he moved over when the need was there for a new executive director. He knew the landscape, so to speak. And he's not unfamiliar to the food bank. And I have just found his vision, his leadership, to be exact. He knows exactly what needs to be done, and he's meeting the moment.
Well, he had to deal with the homeless situation, and of course, a lot of those people need services from the food bank, of course. Karen, tell me about Carrie Van Winkle, the new development director.
Yeah, so she came along about the same time as Zach. Her background in nonprofit work, I believe, started in Deaconess. At least that's where she was prior, working with their grant programs. So as my first liaison into the company, my direct boss, the development director, she has been fantastic at being patient, showing me the ropes. I'm, of course, bringing in a lot of new energy and some entrepreneurial experience, but I am brand new to the nonprofit world. So I'm relying on both Carrie and Zach quite a bit.
Well, let's learn more about your background, Joe. Interesting background, a health scientist, PhD, a health educator, known as the diet doc. Tell me about the diet doc.
Well, this is going to go back quite a ways.
Okay.
I'm not a young guy any longer, but I did start out in orthopedic physical therapy. That's what I thought I wanted to do with my life. And I also had this side hobby as a competitive physique sport bodybuilder. So in tangent with my career in physical medicine, I continued on my education just for fun. So ended up with a doctorate in nutrition, thinking this would be just fun and helpful. Ended up moving to Evansville almost 30 years ago and started a fitness company that would incorporate a lot of the new corporate wellness facade integration with fitness and nutrition. Around that time, I started writing for a lot of the top fitness magazines nationally. So I was creeping into this unknown world with some prominence nationally. And then along came the internet and social media, so that continued to carry that wave a little bit. So 30 years later, I have created a certification agency and business mentorship company to help nutrition coaches and health coaches bridge that gap into the world of everybody trying to improve their health, and most people are trying to do it by losing weight. So create a lot of curriculum, developed a lot of staff, and helped a lot of coaches enter that world.
So what brought you to Evansville then? And where were you before you came to Evansville?
I was in northern Indiana, born in South Bend. My wife and I both went to school there, met there. And during my time in Indianapolis, I went to the IU Med School for a while, ended up back in Warsaw, Indiana, a little bit south of South Bend. And I had met a friend here, a personal trainer who was also in the bodybuilding world. So there was an opportunity to move down here and do something entrepreneurially. And we had two small children at the time. And for some reason, I took the risk. I just thought it sounded great and would make a go of it.
Let's go into the bodybuilding world. That conjures up all kinds of images. You're a competitive bodybuilder. What did that mean? You go to different events, or what? Tell me about that.
Yeah, a little etiology story here is I was a pretty unhealthy, chubby little kid. I think you could look back at my childhood and say there was definite food insecurity. I grew up in a mobile home, eating government cheese. I didn't even know we were that poor, but I had four other siblings. And so retrospectively looking back, I had pretty humble beginnings. And I thought my way out of that was education. So that's why it was very high on my list to go to school and begin my career as that orthopedic physical therapist. But along the way, as that chubby little kid who was picked last in gym class literally every time, getting around the 10, 11, 12-year-old range, pre-puberty for a boy especially, was a chance to say, yeah, I want to do something different. And so for some reason, I decided exercise, quote unquote, and eating better was a path into a better life physically. So a year goes by, another year goes by. Pretty soon I'm developing a decent amount of muscle and I'm playing sports. I'm in high school now. And there's a little bit of a subculture there, bodybuilding. There's, kind of like professional wrestling, there's professional bodybuilding, and there's the soap opera you can get involved in and all of the caricatures. And I really just I was kind of good at it. And I moved up the ranks and became a pro natural drug-free bodybuilder. And that's where I started developing these relationships with writing and editors and publishers of all of these fitness magazines.
So you bring all of that background into the Tri-State Food Bank. Nutrition's a big deal, right?
Absolutely. And one of the things I was so surprised to find out, and I think this is probably the most unknown thing about the food bank, we buy food. We're not just picking up rotten apples and expired canned goods from church food drives. We spend our budget leveraging amazing, nutritious food, produce from local farmers that we have contracts with, all of the major grocers, Costco, Sam's, Walmart, Meijer's. We are buying semi-loads of high-quality food to distribute to all of the food pantries, the shelters, the kitchens in our 33-county area, so more than 160 partner agencies. And so me as a health scientist, somebody with a doctorate in nutrition, that was great to hear. That's what I wanted to know. We're not just providing calories for people. We are really looking at food, which, interestingly, even the HHS has a program called Food is Medicine. And Robert F. Kennedy says that's important to him. It's a little disheartening that he's slashing the budget so we can actually provide it, but at least the framework is there where they say we want to view food as a nutritious necessity.
Of course, food insecurity is a problem nationwide. Any stats on the issue right here in the tri-state?
Yes. So you mentioned that food insecurity roughly hits 13-14% nationally. We here in Vanderburgh County are at 16.2%, which means almost 30,000 people right in our county are food insecure. Throughout our service area, those 33 counties in southern Illinois, northern, west Kentucky, and southern Indiana, we're serving counties that are 21 and 22%.
Wow.
A lot of poverty in some of our rural counties.
Mm-hmm. Now, any personal stories of the people who have been helped?
I'm certainly just getting started, but mm-hmm. maybe I shouldn't say this. I don't think there's a day I have worked yet in 2 months where at some point during the day I'm just not wiping tears from my eyes at my computer. There are a million stories. I mean, they come across my desk every day. To see the volunteers come in like an army, to sort and to fill some of the food boxes and the weekend kids' backpacks that we provide, it's just amazing. And I will say for Hunger Action Day, which is today, it's the Super Bowl of the year for us. Yesterday I was opening the mail, and I have an envelope with two single dollar bills in it. Somebody in our area said, I'm going to chip in what I can, and they sent $2 bills.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Tri-State Food Bank we talked about has a large service area, 33 counties, of course, not in southern Indiana, southern Illinois, and western Kentucky. There's a satellite center in southern Illinois?
Yes, Vienna. That is where we have a specific cold storage facility. As I mentioned, we have a lot of contracts with farmers producing produce for us. It's one of the ways we can leverage our dollars so well. For every dollar somebody sends us, we can turn that into at least six high-quality meals. And part of that is having those contracts, and to have an area right there in Vienna just helps with distribution. Illinois is where we have 16 counties we serve, a lot of them very rural, so it's definitely a concentration spot for us.
So what is Feeding America, that organization?
Feeding America was started in the 1960s by a gentleman, John Van Hingle, and he was in Phoenix, Arizona, volunteering at a food bank, and he had this thought. I hear 40% of the food we produce in our country is wasted, is thrown away, and yet we have this growing amount of hunger. Seems like a logistic problem. So he got a truck, and he just started to bridge that gap. And now Feeding America is a $5.5 billion behemoth in our industry. It's our parent agency. We are a regional partner and affiliate. Feeding America reaches every single county in this country, and the resources, the infrastructure, the guidance that they provide to a bank like us is essential. It's purely amazing.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked about you have to buy your food, and of course, the budgets have been cut, so that makes it difficult. This food, the quality of the food is monitored. Who does that?
So the USDA is definitely an agency that has to sign off on us. We have inspections. Local health agencies do the same. We are under the same regulatory rules and regulations of any food handler.
Mm-hmm. So what's an average day like at the Tri-State Food Bank warehouse?
It's amazing. I love going out in the warehouse. I'm off in the corner in my office doing my thing, working with donors and trying to curate relationships. And a lot of the times I'm out and about, also having meetings. But when I go out in the warehouse and I see our warehouse manager and supervisors and the staff and the volunteers, it's very much like being at Costco. It's an 80,000 square foot warehouse. And so you see probably half a dozen forklifts at any time, just wheeling around pallets of food, providing them to, as I said, the shelters, the agencies in our area.
We are talking to Joe Klimczewski, Resource Development Director of the Tri-State Food Bank based in Evansville. Still to come, the volunteers, we're going to talk about them who help the Feed the Hungry among us and how you can help, and the expanded vision of the food bank to attack the causes of food insecurity. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. My guest is Joe Klimczewski, Resource Development Director at the Evansville-based Tri-State Food Bank, serving 33 counties and now dealing with budget cuts as the need continues to grow. So, Joe, tell our listeners more about this big warehouse off Lynch Road. You got massive coolers out there, lots of packaged goods, also produce as well.
Absolutely. Up until about 5 years ago, they had a collection of small buildings around Michigan Street, I think Delaware, just kind of all around a block. So people would have to go from building to building to see the different operations and work. And they began a capital project at least 5 years ago. I think that's when they moved in. And this warehouse off of Lynch Road, as I mentioned, 80,000 square feet, has an incredible amount of elbow room, floor to ceiling warehouse infrastructure.
Was that the old Tupperware building?
I believe it is, now that you mention it. I was afraid you were going to ask me, and I wasn't sure, but now
I think that's what it was before, a Tupperware warehouse.
It's suited perfectly for what we do.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, also, you have these huge coolers there.
So it is a walk-in, just part of the warehouse. If you look at it from the exterior, you can see that's a different part of the building, but I want to say at least 15 or 20,000 of the 80,000 square foot warehouse is simply, a freezer. It's, you're driving forklifts through it. There are shelving apparatus in place. It's just like, as I mentioned, a big Sam's or Costco.
Constant maintenance going on?
I can imagine. I haven't seen that yet, but the business side of my brain understands that is a big facility to maintain.
Now, also, you have produce, which is perishable, of course. Yes. You have to keep that moving in and moving out. You receive any protein?
Yes, both of those. As a matter of fact, those two words, protein and produce, are high on our list every day. And all of the grocer partners we have in the area, we are on speed dial. And our food rescue program entails any produce manager at one of these partners in our community will call us up and say, hey, we have this amount of stuff that needs picked up, or do you want it? It's good food, but it's not going to last over the weekend. And so that is part of our food rescue. And we will bring that right in and immediately fill needs for those 160 plus partner agencies around our 33 county area. We will also, in a case where it just may not even last that long for a day or two for distribution, we will do pop-up produce tents at lower income housing partnerships that we have around town, Section 8 housing. So again, we will call those facility managers and say, can you use some food today? And we will be down there feeding people.
Waste not, want not.
It is a phenomenal operation.
It sounds like it. So the history of the Tri-State Food Bank, was it 1982 around there, something like that?
It was incorporated. Yes.
And I know one of the movers and shakers, Reverend Phil Hoy, who just died recently, got the ball rolling. Glenn Roberts just left the organization. Now Zach Hieronymus is running the show. So it was in that, like you said, the different buildings on Virginia Street moved to the big warehouse now on Lynch Road. What's the future of the Tri-State Food Bank now?
Well, I have no doubt because of the leadership that Zach and Carrie and Tammy, Heather, some of our other directors that have been there, you know, for up to 10 years, we're going to keep the lights on and we're going to keep providing food where it's needed most. We just are going to have less resources to do it with. And to that end, I have to mention, for a food bank our size nationally, we have in the mid-20s as far as staff members there. We're about operating at 60% capacity. So everybody's doing a little extra work. Everybody's budget conscious to make sure that we can keep filling those needs. But we're not going anywhere. We just have to find ways to make sure we have the food for everybody.
Now, the food bank supplies pantries, shelters, kitchens, even programs for children of the backpack program. Also for seniors, is that well as well?
Yes, we have some direct programming that we do ourselves. So 1,500 kids in our service area every Friday receive a weekend backpack. These are kids who wouldn't have enough food to make it through the weekend. They're the kids who get sponsored breakfast and lunches at school. And a teacher who picked up one day for one of the local schools said, "You guys have no idea what this means. Like, our kids get so excited, like, yay, it's Friday, we get our food packs." Mm-hmm. We also served 1.6 million meals to seniors last year in the form of 30-pound senior grocery boxes that we deliver. We serve 10,000 veterans in Operation Full Pack. We do the pop-up produce and the grocery rescue I mentioned. Those are direct programming efforts that we provide right from us to people who need it. Then on top of that, we supply the food to 160-plus agencies, shelters, kitchens, pantries around the tri-state.
My guest is Joe Klimczewski, Resource Development Director of the Evansville-based Tri-State Food Bank. The expanded vision is to go after the causes of food insecurity, nutrition, not just calories, and workforce development. Tell me about those.
So this is another vision of Zach Hieronymus, our executive director, and he has a master's degree in public administration. He has experience as an executive director at Aurora. He understands the interworkings of all of the dynamics that people in poverty face, people facing food insecurity. And the one thing that nobody wants is to feed people perpetually if we could also be giving them a leg up in societal, with occupation training, occupational training, things like that. So there are some food banks in larger areas that we often visit. They're on our radar. We're modeling after them. Best practices are shared throughout the Feeding America network. And absolutely for us to start helping people that we are providing food to also provide some occupational and other civic assistance.
Mm-hmm. Logistics, of course, play a major role in this endeavor, getting the food in and out. A fleet of trucks, do you have those?
You know, outside of my office, I see a couple vans, but on the other side of the building, yes, there are box trucks and semis that are constantly coming in and out, picking up food, delivering food. Also, just some of our partner agencies, they're doing a lot of this legwork themselves. They're coming in and picking up and always doing what they can.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the most requested and needed food items?
Well, you mentioned protein and produce. Again, we have freezer capacity here as well as in Illinois. So we are getting high protein foods. The dry goods staples, one of the things that was, again, interesting to me, because I think when people think of a food bank, it's the church food drive. It's everybody bringing in cans of soup and so forth. And we are, our food sourcing coordinator, food sourcing manager, is very good at looking at exactly what these pantries, these shelters, these kitchens need. And there's a lot of facilitation and coordination between all these entities to decide what's the best use of these dollars, what's going to give people the highest nutrition quality, mm-hmm. per pound, per dollar, not just for the logistics, but because of that human element. And so all of these decisions, I think, are made from the top to the bottom of what people really want to consume.
I know the last time I toured the warehouse, I went into this one room and there was this huge pallet of peanut butter.
Always. Yeah, high density calories there.
Okay. Now, there's a mini market at the food bank.
You know, I saw that you had mentioned that, and I don't think it's there now. We have a sorting center.
Okay, maybe that's what it is. Okay.
And I think what you're probably perceiving or maybe saw was an area that could be. We have it set up that way, but I think maybe because of the budget constraints we're under, we personally at this point don't offer food to people. People don't come off the street.
So no walk-ins.
To us.
Okay.
We have to refer them out to one of our sponsored and supported shelters and pantries.
So you're a regional food bank. Others in Indiana then?
Yes, a big one in Indianapolis that I'm aware of, Gleaners. There are probably two or three more that filter around the northern area. I'm just starting to investigate all those resources so I can start getting over there and seeing some of their operations as well. I'm very impressed with Gleaners in Indianapolis for sure.
Now, you mentioned monitoring the food safety is done by the Department of Agriculture.
Yes, we have different inspections like anybody else. You know, we even have audits annually. There are a lot of governing agencies that look at nonprofits. So, yes, we have to be prepared for those. And, of course, our standards of practice through the year are up to that standard.
The Salvation Army in Evansville is among the dozens of organizations which receive food from the Tri-State Food Bank. Here's my conversation with Salvation Army volunteer Maria Hillenbrand and Salvation Army Captain Brandon Lewis.
Well, the soup kitchen is every day.
Yeah, every day.
And the food pantry is Mondays is when they started a few years ago self-shopping. And basically anybody can come in every 30 days, and on Mondays they can choose what their family likes and what they need. They literally can come in and shop, shopping cart the whole nine yards. And then on Wednesdays, they are given what they more or less have in the food pantry. So it's families that come in for and individuals for various reasons, a whole lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Where does this food come from?
Well, the Tri-State Food Bank, I know that there is a avenue that the Salvation Army gets food to them. War on Hunger, I mean, the different canned goods that people donate and the money. And then Captain can educate us more on that. I know a lot of businesses in the Tri-State are kind enough to donate, too.
A lot of businesses will hold food drives for their workplaces. What we often see is when people recognize that there's a need, something that's tangible, like feeding the hungry, it awakens a passion in them. They want to connect with it. And so we have a tremendous amount of private donations that come in that help bolster our feeding program and our food pantry.
Still to come, more of my conversation with Joe Klimczewski, Resource Development Officer at the Tri-State Food Bank. We'll hear about the important role of volunteers and how you can help keep the food train on track. I'm David James. This is 2 Main Street. We'll be right back. Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. We are on a mission to end hunger, at least here in our own backyard, with Joe Klimczewski, Health Educator and Resource Development Director at the Tri-State Food Bank based in Evansville. So any trip to the grocery now, and you know it's more expensive to put good food on the table, rising food costs affect donations and what you can buy. So you have to buy this food, right?
Absolutely.
And the costs are going up?
Exactly.
So how are you handling that?
I spoke to our food sourcing manager yesterday, and that was my exact question to her. With inflation and instability in pricing, does that really affect our prices? And she said, oh my gosh, yes. So again, we're just forced to try to make more with less.
So when egg prices go up, you have to spend more money.
Absolutely. And that's where having those relationships and contracts with local farmers is very important to us. And that was one of the first things we had to trim when we had that big federal budget cut.
And I know we talked about that when the founder of Feeding America was talking about the amount of food wasted in America. It's tremendous, and you're trying to put every dollar you can into getting the most food you can. What do you know about wasting food?
Yeah, one of the things I thought of when I first moved into this space to help at the food bank was the restaurant industry. But their job, of course, with their own world, their own space in food, is to not have waste. And we can't handle food that has already been prepared and so forth. We're dealing with pallets and pallets of food and moving them around to the people who need it most. And so for us, food waste is just having those relationships, even with convenience stores. We have all of our networks of convenience stores in the tri-state, and they may run into times when food is simply going to be expired and they can't sell it, and they will donate that to us as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, any strange food donations? I know I talked to Glenn Roberts, and he had a donation of chicken feet that he didn't know what to do with, but apparently that's a big deal down in South. Have you heard of any strange food donations?
You know, I may not have been around long enough yet to see those. I'm going to have to wander out in the warehouse more often, but I will definitely keep you posted.
Okay, and we talked about Hunger Action Month.
Yes.
And what's that all about?
So right now in September, we are in Hunger Action Month. Today is Hunger Action Day. And it's simply our way of bringing awareness to the needs of our community. One of the things, David, that I think a lot of people don't often understand is that they see the homeless person, they hear those stories, they see somebody sleeping on the street, and they don't realize that the vast majority of people who need food assistance are working. Almost 90% of people who receive food assistance are working. They just don't have enough. I mentioned we have 150,000 people in our area who are food insecure, almost 30,000 right here in Vandenberg County. 52% of those people do not qualify for SNAP benefits. So they have nowhere to turn. So a lot of these working people, mothers trying to make decisions, can I buy my child shoes or food? Can I get them medicine or food? Those are real dilemmas we're facing every day.
You talked about food as medicine. Being a nutritionist, how important is that?
Well, it did,
for our well-being.
Yeah, it was just such a great bonus for me to see that that is part of the process. I had this mindset that we're trying to supply food, we're trying to keep people alive, we're trying to end hunger. So the cheapest food is probably the ultra-processed bad food, and so that's probably going to be the majority of what we provide, and it's just not. It's the opposite. Everybody wants to focus on high quality nutrition, and that's the focus from the top to the bottom.
So in your career as monitoring what we eat and how it affects our body, how would you rate our society right now?
Well, 30 years in my career, there have been times early on I thought, this is going to be the change. This is going to stem the tide. This is where we're going to get better. And I have seen obesity rates that used to be around the 2 to 4% in 1960. Early in my career, they were around 20%, which sounded awful. And I was cavalierly thinking, we're gonna fix this. And then it was 25%, then 30%, and now it's 40%. Including overweight plus obesity, we're at over 70%. And a lot of it is, ironically, the fact that we just can't all afford great, high-quality food. It's that when you are making decisions based on, can I feed my child, you are forced into those ultra-high-processed foods that are just not nutritious. They lead to things like systemic inflammatory conditions in the body. They're going to lead to insulin sensitivity and diabetes. And these are people that you would think don't have enough to eat, and yet they're suffering from both hunger and some of these maladies because of lack of nutrition.
It's ironic, isn't it? What about these weight control medicines that are really popular right now?
The GLPs.
I didn't want to give any brand names.
Okay. Well, that's not a brand name. That's just
I know, but I was going to say a brand name.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Okay.
We're now into the third or fourth generation. First of all, 20 years of research on these for diabetes. That's what they were FDA approved for. So it's not like these things just came out of the blue. Becoming FDA approved for weight loss was another whole set of trials that they had to go through. It's a 50-50. I'm happy that these tools are here, but physiologically, they simply reduce hunger. And there are some concerning side effects. So the problem is you take somebody who has the genetics for obesity, they may have the environmental conditions for obesity, and you give them this lifeline, and maybe they lose 50 pounds, 100 pounds. As soon as they're off this medication, all of those conditions still exist. And many, many people, just like we saw with gastric bypass surgery, bariatric surgeries of different sorts, they're gaining it back. So we have to find ways to titrate and use maintenance doses. One pharmaceutical company just passed the first FDA approval process for oral peptides. So I think we have to, as the American Medical Association has deemed obesity a disease process, if you really want better outcomes and you want these people to live healthier lives, we're going to have to treat it as a medicated disease process, at least for those who need it in that form.
And the expression, your health is your wealth, is very, very appropriate. Now, you also say a $10 donation equals 60 meals?
Yes. Another big surprising fact to me is just how far we can make that work because of our partnership with Feeding America. Because of the direct contracts we have with grocers and food partners, and the fact that some of those food partners that heavily discount for us, they also donate directly to us. So it's a burden that I think all of society is shouldering, and that's one of the great things about this job is I get to see so many people helping.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the volunteers. Who are these people?
They're amazing. I say they are the heartbeat of our facility. So we have an amazing volunteer staff. Mitzi, our front office coordinator, Steve Scales, who's out there, and he's in the arena every day with the volunteers. We have our entire warehouse staff moving food around. But we have a sorting center. So for the programs we directly fund and distribute, the Operation Full Pack for veterans, the senior grocery boxes, the kids' backpacks, etc. We need volunteers every day to come in and sort that food and put it in the containers that we need for those people on the weekends and through the month. And we have an amazing volunteer hub on our website, so you can go register as a volunteer and then immediately look at the schedule. It's all automated. We do it in morning shifts from 8 to noon. Afternoon from 1 to 4:15. We have a lot of teams, corporate teams, businesses who rally their staff and say, hey, let's have a volunteer day once a quarter or once a month and let's do something. So a lot of people around the tri-state are coming in like that. And I mean, it's kind of cliche, but it almost changes you more than mm-hmm. it does the people you're helping.
So what's been the feedback from the pantries and kitchens that you serve?
It's indispensable. It's such an incredible network of people, and I often get to view some of the events and some of the media from Feeding America, so I get to see things, operations like ours, but in San Antonio or Boston or Phoenix. And these volunteers are often even in disaster relief roles. They're pulling up a semi into a hurricane, and they're providing food right there on the spot. I know I sound like, you know, I'm just giddy and I'm the starry-eyed new kid on the block, and I truly am in some ways. But it's extremely heartening to see how hard everybody works.
So how can someone listening to this program, moved by this situation, help?
I think one of the most important things, because 70% of the funding for the entire nonprofit world in general is small donors. We love our large corporate sponsors. We just couldn't survive without them. We get grant funding. But 70% of the budget is that person putting $2 bills in the envelope. It's the person saying, I can set up an auto donation for $25 a month or $100 a month. So my wish as the resource officer is for everybody who is inspired by nonprofit in general, and you have your personal ties to different areas, youth services, homelessness, whatever you feel is your calling to support, I would at least propose that food insecurity and hunger is as primary as it gets, and please include Tri-State Food Bank on your list of people you support.
And it's your passion. I know you said we can end hunger. You believe that?
I do, and I see it. We could be in a lot worse shape. You can see what's happening in other parts of the world and different countries without the infrastructure we do that face famine from time to time. It's real. And I don't want to minimize what we face here, because we've talked about food insecurity. There's a level of that that's called being very food insecure.
And different levels of that. Wow.
5.1% of our population is very food insecure, which means people in the household are going to bed hungry. People in the house are missing meals. Sometimes they're scheduling who gets to eat today, who doesn't. One of the gentlemen that I saw on a video who now volunteers at Gleaners Food Bank in Indianapolis, he grew up as a recipient of food assistance. And he said, I remember sometimes our family sitting around and we would split one baked potato and we'd put salt and pepper on it to make it a little heartier. And so our whole family is eating a baked potato for dinner.
So let's give one final pitch here for the Tri-State Food Bank, that all the services, the people that you serve, people don't know a whole lot about the inner workings of the Tri-State Food Bank. Give us an overview again.
Well, first of all, come out and see us. That's one of the things I want to do as the resource development officer, is connect people and make them feel like they are a team member. We need you to be a team member. So whether you volunteer once a week, my wife is now volunteering weekly. She's on the schedule. She can't stay away now that she has seen what great work we're all doing out there. And so come in and volunteer, bring your friends to volunteer, sign up as a small monthly donor if you can, give a large annual gift if you can, but come out for a tour. You took me around, and I'm very appreciative seeing the WNIN campus here. And I was like a kid in a candy store. And I would love everybody to feel like they can do that with our food bank. Come out and see what we do.
It is an impressive facility. And you will be overwhelmed by the amount of food that's in there and how fast it's moved out to all these 33 counties. Joe Klimczewski, the new resource development director, officer at Tri-State Food Bank based in Evansville. It's a great facility. Do a lot of great work. So thanks for being my guest on 2 Main Street.
Thank you, David. Such a pleasure.
Here's more information on the Tri-State Food Bank from former director Glenn Roberts. Here's part of our conversation in 2022, including that strange donation of chicken feet.
Yeah, we get just about everything, and sometimes we get some very unusual donations.
Such as?
I kind of led you into that one.
Thank you.
I'll tell a story. Now, this actually happened before I was at the food bank, but we have one employee who's been there 22 years. He has seen everything. He's our food source manager. And he tells the story of someone called and said they had chicken to donate. And we don't hesitate. We say, sure, we'll take the chicken. Well, they weren't very specific. And what it was chicken feet. It wasn't the breast, it wasn't the thighs, it wasn't quarter, it was chicken feet, the actual feet. And John was wondering, what in the world do we do with this? And I think he did a little research, and he found a food bank, a Feeding America food bank in Louisiana. And they took it right away, because there's something called chicken feet soup, and there are a lot of cultures that like this soup. It looks like something out of a horror movie. But I did some research, and chicken feet is actually high in what's called collagen. It's a protein, and it's good for joint pain and preventing bone loss. So it's actually very healthy. It's just very weird to eat.
Well, how did this person have a mass of chicken feet?
That I don't know. Maybe that's a question you just don't ask.
Okay, that's true. Okay. And also, when I was on the tour, you had just received a huge shipment of potatoes. tons and tons of potatoes.
Yes, and what you saw were these were government commodity potatoes, so these were provided through the state of Indiana. But if you had been here the week before, we got other potatoes from a very unusual source, and that is a semi-truck within the area had an accident, overturned. And this actually happens more often than you would think, that a truck with food, if they have an accident, whoever was going to receive it, you know, can't receive it. It's damaged goods, but most of that food may have done fine.
Sure.
So we went out there and we brought big containers and we gathered up these potatoes and they were still in good shape and we were able to distribute them.
Score. Where does all this food come from? It must be several sources.
Many sources for our food. One big source, about 30-35% of our food actually does come from the government. These are commodity items. The government purchases these foods, they're surplus foods, and they distribute them to Feeding America food banks. And we use those products in our senior meal boxes, and much of that food goes to our pantries and our soup kitchens. So that's about 30-35% of our food. As you can imagine, 50% or more than half of our food is donated. Various sources of that. You mentioned the grocery stores earlier. That's one source. We also get food straight from food manufacturers. I mean, by the truckload. There might be a food manufacturer who says, you know, I've got two truckloads to donate. And there's a very interesting system that Feeding America has come up with of how us food banks actually vie for this food. And I call it the eBay of food banking. It is a bidding process. We are given shares. It's not money, but these are shares that are replenished on a monthly basis. And an item will come up for bid, and you bid on it, just like eBay. And there's a deadline. And then you find out, you know, who won the bid.
Really?
Yeah. And maybe that's where we got the chicken feet, and we just didn't know there were chicken feet.
Now, you also have these, like a three system of coolers, cool, cold, and colder.
Right. In our warehouse, the warehouse is so spacious that we were able to build our cold storage system all within the building, so nothing is outside and subject to the elements. And we wanted to keep the cold chain unbroken, which is best practice. So when trucks with refrigerated product come, they come to special docks, and we unload it, and it goes straight into what we call the cold dock, and we keep that at about 50 degrees, and it's about 2,000 square feet. Good place to store a lot of produce. From there, if it needs to go into the cooler, we have a 3,000-foot square foot cooler. We keep that about 40 degrees, and from there, it's connected to the freezer, and we keep that right at about 0 or 5 below.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you've done some research into the food bank world, and food banks are kind of a relatively new phenomenon.
They really are. This is an industry that's been around only a few decades. The late 60s, I think it was 1969, it all started in Phoenix, Arizona. And one man had this idea. He had noticed that people who operated pantries were actually dumpster diving behind grocery stores just to get some extra food. And he thought, there's got to be a better way. Mm-hmm. And he came up with this concept of a food bank. It really dedicated to acquiring mass quantities of food, you know, large donations, and getting donations from food manufacturers and warehousing it and distributing it to the pantries and soup kitchens. And so that takes a burden off of them, you know, and keep them from dumpster diving. Interesting concept, beautiful idea, and it kind of took off like wildfire across the country. And large communities, small communities developed this concept of a food bank. And what is now called Feeding America used to be called America's Second Harvest. They are the ones that kind of like tied together these food banks, get them to talk to each other, get them to maybe share ideas or share food if possible. And now it has grown exponentially. It's a wonderful, wonderful network, again, because we share ideas, best practices, and we share food.
Now, of course, the food bank serves all these different agencies that help the poor. And that includes, I guess, the rescue mission and places
yes.
like that, other shelters.
Yes, we supply food to the rescue mission. I mean, so we have about 40 of these agencies just here in the Evansville area. Now, you get out to the rural communities, and, of course, it's sparsely populated, and there are very few pantries and those types of agencies. And we're thrilled to be able to help them, but that's where we have to do more and hit those pockets in the rural communities with the mobile food distributions. But we have, in total, about 150 partner agencies, mostly pantries, but also soup kitchens and shelters.
Now, and you told me that some of these trips to these outlying areas takes a day. It's a day-long trip there and back.
It's a full day for us to go from Evansville to Cairo, Illinois. I mean, that's a good three-hour drive. So the truck driver's got to get up, have his truck loaded, do the three-hour drive, and then unload the truck there at the agency. And it's somewhere along the line they got to stop and eat lunch.
That's right.
And come back. It's a long day just to make one trip.
And the Tri-State Food Bank is remembering one of its longtime directors, the Reverend Phil Hoy, who died recently. He was 88. Hoy served as executive director from 1987 through 2000. Reverend Hoy was a community leader, pastor, former Vandenberg County Council member, and was an Indiana State Representative. It is estimated 800 million people worldwide deal with hunger and food insecurity every day. The major causes include poverty, conflict, weather events, and natural disasters. Food insecurity is defined as not having access to sufficient food or food of an adequate quality to meet someone's basic needs. Feeding America says the high cost of living is a major factor in food insecurity in the U.S., as households deal with housing, health care, utilities, and child and dependent care, stretching already tight budgets. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street. This show and previous shows are on demand at WNIN.org.